maybe you are someone who's cynical about prayer, who doesn't believe there's a God to turn to in difficult circumstances. Well, in the late 19th century, the German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche infamously pronounced that God is dead. And I wonder what Nietzsche might say about how to deal with life's challenges. RN's David Rutledge from the Philosopher's Zone popped in to chat about it. This is exciting because we're talking today about one of, well, for some people, one of the bad boys of kind of recent Christian thought, Friedrich Nietzsche, the son of...
Cue ominous music.
Yes, right. Yeah. And why is that? Tell me about Nietzsche.
Well, Nietzsche, I mean, why is he the bad boy? I mean, I guess his formulation, God is dead, is one of those things that people, if they know nothing else about Nietzsche, they know that he said that or that he wrote that. And, of course, he was incredibly rude about religion in general, but Christianity and Judaism in particular. So there's that as well. And then, of course, a terrible perversion of Nietzsche's thought was taken up by the Nazis, which is another black mark against him, although a very unfair one for all sorts of reasons that we don't need to go into. But God is dead. I mean, when Nietzsche wrote that, what he was really doing was making an observation about the state of European culture at the time.
And he's writing after Charles Darwin. For some people, that was really thrilling and exciting, but for other people, really disorienting. Yeah. And he's writing right in that cultural moment.
Exactly. The rug has been pulled out from under pretty well anything and everything that was taken to be a stable foundation for culture and society and people's understanding of who they were. Just really, really basic stuff. Nietzsche observed that the whole thing had been thrown up for grabs. So when he says God is dead, he's just meaning that the foundations have been shaken and the things that we used to believe in, it's a lot more difficult to believe in now.
And the question of what's left when that's stripped away, and that being a creative and positive enterprise to be engaged in answering that kind of question, that pursuit.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's right, because Nietzsche has this terrible reputation as being a denouncer, someone who just says, no, this is terrible, that's terrible. And of course, there is a lot of that in Nietzsche's philosophy, but he also wants to be understood as someone who says yes to these things, as someone who makes creative best use of these sort of catastrophic things that can happen.
And you've recently spoken to someone, though, who was really intrigued perhaps by the bumper sticker version of Nietzsche as a teenager, but then dived much deeper, went hiking with Nietzsche and kind of had his own journey, I guess, understanding what Nietzsche's thought was about. Can you tell me about John Cagg and the book that he's written?
Yeah, John Cagg, he really put his money where his mouth is. Actually, he put his university's money where his mouth was. What happened was he was an undergrad, I think he was doing his master's degree, and one of his college professors at the university in Pennsylvania where he was studying came to him with an envelope with $3,000 in it and said, here you are, you've never been out of the USA, you're trying to become a Nietzsche scholar, you need to go to Switzerland, as it turned out, the town of Sils Maria in the Swiss Alps, because this is where Nietzsche spent much of the last 10 years of his life. So read it and weep, university students. This guy got $3,000 to go to Europe. So off he went. And yeah, he was one of these, he was 19 years old. He had, as many people do, he had discovered Nietzsche and just sort of gone head over heels. And the Nietzschean ideal of the will to power, this sense that you can transcend the mundane and the everyday through this exercise of will in the sort of rarefied climate of the high country. He was very into that idea. And off he went with not very much gear and no food. He thought that I can sort of, beat my body into submission by starving it and somehow attain this higher state of being. He got lost. He says he nearly died. He spent two nights out in the open with inappropriate clothing and no sleeping bag or anything like that.
Wow.
Yes, he said he lost, 22 pounds, whatever that is in kilos, 10, 11 kilos, something like that, and developed an eating disorder, which he says he still struggles with to this day. It's part of this, taking the idea of transcending the mundane to what turned out to be a rather risky conclusion.
But there's more to Nietzsche's thought about the mundane and how we might deal with it in our personal lives than, say, where John Cagg got to as a 19-year-old.
Yeah, that's right. And, I mean, what's interesting is this book that John Cagg wrote is the account of two trips that he makes to Sils Maria, the first as a 19-year-old. The second trip that he makes is 17 years later with his wife and young child. And there, he still has this yearning for a kind of transcendence, and he still wants to sort of hike the trails and find something that takes him up and out of the mundane. But he's finding it increasingly difficult, of course, because he has a wife and child. And he writes about how he sort of takes off for these hikes and doesn't come back until after dark. And then his wife's really angry with him.
There's a question about how do you put up with the necessary stuff of life? What do we do with these limitations? Or are they limitations, or are they things, according to Nietzsche, that we need to learn to live with in a more constructive way?
Yeah, that's right. Which is interesting because that's a question that Nietzsche himself had to answer for himself later in his life. I mean, Nietzsche had no family, he wasn't married. In fact, he was terrible at intimate relationships, but he was very sick, of course, and ended up having this terrible mental breakdown. But in the last decade or so of his life, he had to put up with all the terrible privations and humiliations of chronic bad health. And the work that he wrote around that time, he talked about what he called the love of fate, the amor fati, where you don't just tolerate these things that happen to you, you don't just put up with them, but you have to learn to love them. And that was a big sort of challenge of his later philosophy, to love what happens to you. And this is something that John Cagg writes about, that you can sort of take this idea with you into middle age. As you grow out of your 19-year-old infatuation with the will to power Nietzsche, you can sort of move into the later work of Nietzsche and in some sense learn to deal with not necessarily the huge tragedies, but just the everyday compromises and the mundane sorts of privations that just having a family, having a job, those things can throw at you.
Well, fantastic, David. I'm really looking forward to hearing John Cagg talk about hiking with Nietzsche.
Nietzsche gives us is sort of presents a challenge for us. He calls this the eternal return, and it's a thought experiment. He says, imagine that a demon comes to you in your loneliest of lonelies and says to you that you must relive this moment, this very moment, not once or twice or 100 or 1,000 times, but an infinite number of times. And would that idea crush you, or would it elevate your soul? And I pose this to my students, and my students, like I did when I was 19, think that the only way of answering the eternal return is through the will to power. This idea that what we find most meaningful as human beings is in the powerful exercising of our volitions. But as you get into middle age, or as you approach middle age, I think you have the realization that life consists not in moments of the will to power, but in moments when you exercise volition in negative ways or destructive ways, where you hurt yourself or hurt others. And you have to come to terms with that, and the eternal return remains. Can you will those moments, the moments that you feel weak, or the moments where you feel humiliated or despised, can you will those again infinitely? Now, the amor fati is Nietzsche's idea of the love of fate. And I think that this also is a way of thinking through a sort of mature adulthood. Because when I was 19, I had no idea how boring life was going to be or stultifying it could be. The love of fate says that you must love not only those moments that you exercise the will to power in creative ways, but you must love those moments where you are most humiliated, when you are the sickest, when you are really downtrodden. And I think that that sort of power, that sort of acceptance and love of fate, as I approach my 40s, it's been very useful to think through.
It's interesting that we're talking about the sick moments, the humiliating moments, the downtrodden moments in the context of your second trip back to Sils Maria with your wife and young daughter. It was a difficult time in some respects, wasn't it? Although a different order of difficulty from the first time you went.
I think you can be more honest about that. I think it was absolutely brutal. I think that as you grow older and you become a parent and a partner or a husband or a wife, the forbidden questions that Nietzsche encourages us to ask change. So when you're 19, the forbidden questions are something like, you know, there are questions about sexuality or questions about your intelligence or questions about friendships. But as you get older, the forbidden questions change. And if you're honest about how you feel about parenting, if you're honest about how you feel about marriage, I don't always think that these are stress-free situations. And Nietzsche says, look at them with clear eyes. At the beginning of The Antichrist, he says, look me straight in the face. And I think that that's what Nietzsche is asking us to do with the relationships that we have. So this second trip, did I oftentimes want to abandon both my wife and my child? Honestly, the answer is yes. Did I oftentimes think that they would be better off if I did? The answer is yes. Now, do I think that that's actually what many, many people, many, many listeners also feel in their quiet moments? I think, again, the answer is yes. I think it depends on how honest we want to be with ourselves.
Philosopher John Cagg telling RN's David Rutledge about hiking with Nietzsche and learning how to love your fate. You can hear the rest of that interview on The Philosopher's Zone via the ABC Listen app or The Philosopher's Zone webpage.